Barry Campbell, narrator.
This is from Cool Blue Tomb, a detective novel by Paul Campricos. She was a few pounds heavier now, and her black hair was touched by gray, but her dark almond-shaped eyes were still strikingly beautiful. I remember my pang of teenage lust the time the back of her blouse lost a button. She looked up and smiled. "Hi, Sock. How are things down on the Cape?" I went behind the desk, impulsively pecked her cheek, just for old times, and said, "Busy, Thina. You look terrific. Is the family around?" She blushed faintly. "Thanks, I needed that. It's been one of those days. They're out back. Be prepared. They're having an, marketing session." I squeezed her shoulder and stepped into an adjoining office dominated by an enormous color photograph of the Acropolis in all its magnificent ruin. Under the picture, in the delft blue of the Greek national flag, were the words Parthenon Pizza. One out of every three frozen pizzas sold in New England is a Parthenon. Try a classic. A door next to the poster flew open, and an apparition in white burst in. White sneakers, white slacks, white t-shirt, and white arms. Face and mustache caked with enough flour to bake a week's supply of rolls at the Parker House. My younger brother looked as if he had fallen into a flour bin, which was probably what happened. "Hi, George," I said.
"Sock," he gasped breathlessly, sending up a powdery cloud of flour. "You gotta come and settle an argument. I just read Pa's order for Southeastern Mass. It's huge. He's crazy. Linguica pizza's a new product, for God's sake."
"I don't know, George. Lots of people in New Bedford and Fall River can't get through their breakfast without frying up a few hunks of sausage with their eggs, so they'll have an early start on the day's heartburn. Maybe Pa's right." Speak of the devil, George was brushed aside by a stumpy white barrel.
"You tell him, Aristotle,"
my father boomed in an accent as thick as yogurt.
"George, you want to make it big into pizza business, you gotta think big."
This is from Macklin's Women, a Western by J.R. Roberts. As I approached the livery, halfway across the town, a blonde girl was closing the doors, apparently shutting down for lunch. "Excuse me," I called out to her.
"Yeah?"
she answered, turning and, hands on formidable hips, squinting into the noonday sun as she attempted to make out my face. She appeared to be barely 18, but she had the full breasts and proud bearing of a grown woman. Her wheat-colored hair was long and fine, and the same color eyelashes made her appear to have none at all. A cluster of freckles played across the bridge of her nose, which wrinkled up as she continued peering at my face. She had a wide mouth. All that marred her wholesome good looks was the absence of one of her front teeth. It did little, however, to damage her overall appeal. I stepped down from the wagon so as to save her further difficulty with the sun. Once I was on the ground, she was able to take a good, frank look at me. What she saw was a tall, lean man covered with trail dust and a week's worth of stubble. Cleaned up, I might have been called pleasant-looking, but at the moment I looked like hell.
"Can I help you?"
she asked.
"Well, I'd like to put up my rig and have my animals cared for, but I see that you're closing up. For lunch?"
"'S right. Paul's laid up with a broke leg, so I got to close up to eat or I don't eat,"
she explained. "I see. Well," I began, scratching my head like I was pondering a major problem. "I can't very well leave my horses and rig standing out here, can I?"
"Not if and you want 'em to be here when you get back."
"Say," I said, hoping I looked like I had just gotten the best idea since the wheel, "I'll tell you what. What's your name?"
"Lizzie."
"I'll tell you what, Lizzie. If you'll put up my rig and care for my horses, I'll buy you the biggest lunch you ever had. How's that sound?" Without hesitation, she said,
"That sounds right nice, mister."
"Clint."
"Clint, are you sure you can afford it?"
This is from A Short History of Nearly Everything, nonfiction by Bill Bryson. Thank goodness for the atmosphere. It keeps us warm. Without it, Earth would be a lifeless ball of ice with an average temperature of minus 60 degrees Fahrenheit. In addition, the atmosphere absorbs or deflects incoming swarms of cosmic rays, charged particles, ultraviolet rays, and the like.
Altogether, the gaseous padding of the atmosphere is equivalent to a 15-foot thickness of protective concrete, and without it, these invisible visitors from space would slice through us like tiny daggers. Even raindrops would pound us senseless if it weren't for the atmosphere's slowing drag. The most striking thing about our atmosphere is that there isn't very much of it. It extends upward for about 120 miles, which might seem reasonably bounteous when viewed from ground level, but if you shrank the Earth to the size of a standard desktop globe, it would only be about the thickness of a couple of coats of varnish. For scientific convenience, the atmosphere is divided into four unequal layers: troposphere, stratosphere, mesosphere, and ionosphere, now often called the thermosphere. The troposphere is the part that's dear to us. It alone contains enough warmth and oxygen to allow us to function, though even it swiftly becomes uncongenial to life as you climb up through it. From ground level to its highest point, the troposphere, or turning sphere, is about 10 miles thick at the equator and no more than 6 or 7 miles high in the temperate latitudes where most of us live. 80% of the atmosphere's mass, virtually all of the water, and thus virtually all of the weather, are contained within this thin and wispy layer. There really isn't much between you and oblivion.